This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief at FanDuel and at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 196 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. In this past week's NumberFire Podcast Network free roll, Rardu won 3 months of NumberFire Premium. They paired Christian McCaffrey with Saquon Barkley and Juju Smith-Schuster to get the win. In addition to the NumberFire Premium, they also won a ton of free FanDuel points to be used on entries. If you want to give FanDuel a try this week for free, your URL for the NumberFire Podcast free roll is FanDuel.com/league/NumberFire. That's FanDuel.com/league/NumberFire. And that's for a chance at NumberFire Premium memberships and FanDuel points. Now let's dig into this week's mailbag questions. This first question is from @RLTom9. Love the show, JJ. Thanks. Quick question here. How confident can we be with James White with Rex Burkhead returning? So I've talked about James White a few times this season on this show, whether it be my mailbag show or the 15 transactions one. And he's made me look sort of dumb at times because throughout the season, I kept screaming touchdown regression. And then he just kept scoring touchdowns. And this is coming from someone who openly liked throwing darts at that New England backfield entering the year. He was someone that I actually talked about in my Spotting a Breakout Running Back article that I wrote this offseason on NumberFire. But I think we've got to realize two things with James White. First, even with a healthy backfield, he was a clear bargain back in August. Even if Sony Michel and Rex Burkhead were healthy all season long, I'm a firm believer that James White would still have posted RB2 numbers. Things did sort of fall into place for him, though. And that's the second thing that I think that we've all got to realize. It's not a bad thing. James White is really good at what he does. But Rex Burkhead goes down early in the season, and then Sony Michel missed time, which enabled James White to see more work on the ground. In weeks 7, 8, and 9, which were the 3 weeks Sony Michel missed if you count the game where he got hurt, which was against Chicago, James White averaged 10.3 attempts, and he saw 10 targets per game. His season averages outside of those three games is 4.9 rushing attempts and 8 targets per contest. If someone tells you that Sony Michel doesn't impact James White, they're out of their minds. White's only three games with a snap rate north of 70% came without Sony Michel. And then touchdowns were just flowing from White early in the season. What he was doing was not sustainable from a touchdown scoring standpoint. As I said on my show earlier this season, touchdown regression didn't mean White would become some worthless fantasy asset. It just meant that it was unlikely that he would continue to be an elite option in fantasy football. Because that's what he was throughout the first half of the season. There was no way he was going to keep scoring close to a touchdown per game. So overperformance in the touchdown column happened, as did a lack of competition for a chunk of the season. That combination is what helped James White go from being what would probably be a solid RB2 in PPR formats to a near elite running back option. So yes, I'm nervous about Rex Burkhead's return. Anytime you add another body to a backfield, it's not a good thing. You can make the argument at wide receiver that a good wideout can take away coverage, and therefore a secondary wide receiver benefits. AJ Green and Tyler Boyd might be a good example of that. But at running back, teams aren't deploying multiple backs on the field at the same time throughout a game like they are at wide receiver. So if Rex Burkhead is on the field, in most cases, James White won't be. I can't stress this enough though. This doesn't mean that I think James White won't be a viable fantasy option moving forward. He absolutely will. He's maintained a really nice target share in an offense with Tom Brady throwing the football. He should still be a nice RB2 in PPR formats, and the Patriots could be involved in a high-scoring game in Week 15 against Pittsburgh. And he's good. James White is a great pass-catching back. But the answer to almost all of these questions with running backs is that yes, it's going to hurt them. Maybe not as much as I would have thought at the beginning of the year, because Burkhead more than likely won't have a crazy huge role, but I would much rather have James White on my roster with Sony Michel and Rex Burkhead sidelined than having James White on my roster with Sony Michel and Rex Burkhead active. It's as simple as that. This next question is from @Stevers_12. Hey JJ, I have the Bears D, but kind of spooked about starting them week 14 against the Rams. I stashed Arizona, who are at home versus Detroit, but the Steelers are available at Oakland. Would you start any of them over Chicago or stay the course with the Bears? I think that you can make the argument for the Steelers in this case because they're a team that's not bad themselves from a fantasy perspective. They lead the NFL in sacks. But I do think Chicago should still be fine against the Rams since they're playing at home. I'd probably play Pittsburgh as of today, though, but I'm open to my mind changing by next week. This next question is from @burleyboys77. Do you prefer to handcuff your own running backs or take the handcuffs of players not on your roster to boost your upside? I hate to say this, but it depends. If you have a running back who doesn't have a super clear handcuff, then that handcuff obviously matters a lot less. If you have Kareem Hunt, though, then I'd more than likely handcuff him with Spencer Ware because Spencer Ware is one of the few elite handcuffs in the game. Maybe going about this from another perspective would be easier. I would handcuff other running backs that aren't on my roster if, number one, my running backs don't have obvious handcuffs, and number two, if my team is clearly not as good as other playoff teams and I need upside. I can give you a real-life example of this in my home league. I know you guys don't care about my leagues, but I figured an example might help. I'm 9-3 right now, and I'm locked into a first-round bye. It's a 14-team league, and my team is currently Drew Brees, Melvin Gordon, Tevin Coleman, Kerryon Johnson, James White, DeAndre Hopkins, Amari Cooper, Tyler Boyd, and Trey Burton. It's a solid team for a 14-teamer. But as you just heard, I've gotten crushed by injuries with Melvin Gordon and Kerryon Johnson. And there are a couple of teams in the league who are objectively better. So instead of just trying to roster someone like Ito Smith as Tevin Coleman's handcuff, I picked up Malcolm Brown in case a Todd Gurley injury happens. Because I need upside with this Melvin Gordon injury. So hopefully that example helps. This next question is from @lolicious. Thoughts on the Bengals pass catchers with the backup quarterback? I got this question a lot this week. At first, I was shocked that so many people on Twitter seemed to think that there won't be any changes at all offensively, but then I remembered that people think Andy Dalton sucks. Andy Dalton doesn't suck, and he's the starter for a reason. To just assume a backup isn't going to hurt the rest of his offense from a fantasy perspective, that's kind of foolish in my opinion. Is there a chance that Jeff Driscoll plays better down the stretch? Sure. Of course there is. He also brings an interesting rushing component that Dalton doesn't necessarily have. So there's still reason to believe the offense can function as a decent one. I just think the smartest, most logical thing is to downgrade Bengals pass catchers with the move, at least a little bit. This next question is from @CrosbySpencer1. A number of the young wide receivers have fallen off recently. Situations, schedules, skills, etc. Who are the ones worth rostering now and with an eye towards 14 through 16? Thanks. I'm not sure what wide receivers you're specifically referring to here, but when I saw the question, I immediately thought about Cortland Sutton. I talked about him in my 15 transactions column and podcast this week, but Denver doesn't have a tough matchup left on their schedule through the fantasy football season. And while Sutton hasn't been good at all without Demaryius Thomas, the talent is there. So he's someone that I would still hold on to or look to add on the waiver wire depending on availability. This next question is from @DarkKnight_FF. Need opinions. Should each team be able to decide who to play to determine their playoff matchups? And then this person lists A, teams can sit players, or B, teams must play full offense lineup. Okay, so I've seen this topic on Twitter a lot over the last week or two, and I think I might have a contrarian opinion on it that might make people mad. I think it's totally fine if you want to bench your lineup in order to help a worse team make the playoffs, as long as your rules don't say anything against it. I'm basically someone who thinks you should be able to do anything within the rules of your league. If you want to trade with a non-playoff team before the trade deadline, then do it if the rules allow you to. If you want to bench your roster because you're locked into the one seed and you want to see a worse team in your eyes make the playoffs, go for it. Hopefully you don't believe in karma, though. But your league should find rules for these sort of things. Whether it's just telling teams that they can't do it, or just providing some sort of incentive for teams to play the season through. Your commissioner needs to step up and create some rules to help these situations. This next question is from @RejectedPapers. Can you talk a bit about playing your quarterback versus your defense? For example, Rodgers versus Chicago in week 15. Is it better to stream defense and quarterback, or just hope the defense recovers fumbles for touchdowns and nothing else? To be honest, there shouldn't be a ton of instances where this happens because there are very few plug-and-play defenses in fantasy football. And generally speaking, you're not playing defenses against teams with good quarterbacks. And good quarterbacks are who you're using in fantasy football. But in a hypothetical case where you've got a defense that's facing your quarterback, I would try to change things up. You're capping your upside when you do that. And there's enough variance with defense that you should be able to find a usable one off your waiver wire each week. This next question is from @Matuk123. Looking at Mahomes' rest of season schedule, should we look to roster and maybe start another quarterback like Lamar Jackson or Dak Prescott, or ride him to the ship? Thanks. You're starting Patrick Mahomes. Don't overstate matchups at the expense of benching a top player at his position. Even if that position is generally replaceable, it doesn't matter. Players like Lamar Jackson and Dak Prescott can absolutely outscore Mahomes in a given week, sure. But Mahomes is going to have the highest projection regardless of the matchup. Keep playing Patrick Mahomes. This last question is another Mahomes-related question. It's from @JGribbles. I got Mahomes in round 14. It's a league where you can keep one guy for the price that you drafted him up until you throw him back. Am I nuts to keep Mahomes for a 14th every year and just build around that, even if it means ignoring quarterback streaming? Also have Connor at the 17th and David Johnson at the 13th. First off, I think it's incredibly important to know that quarterback streaming should not be your go-to strategy in fantasy football at quarterback. Your goal is to find a late-round gem like Patrick Mahomes that you can plug and play. So drafting guys late is where it's at, while quarterback streaming is a very nice and easy worst-case scenario. But regarding the question more specifically, do I think you're nuts if you were to keep Patrick Mahomes? Nuts probably isn't the right word. I think given your alternatives of James Conner, who looks to be the starter beyond this year, and David Johnson, I do think it's a little illogical to keep Patrick Mahomes. And it's not because I think Patrick Mahomes is bad. I think Mahomes deserves to be MVP right now. It's either him or Drew Brees. But it's very hard for quarterbacks to give you an advantage in fantasy football in a single year, let alone giving you a significant advantage year over year. Patrick Mahomes could break records this year, but to assume he can keep up this pace each year would be irrational. He has a 9.5% touchdown rate right now. Touchdown rate being touchdowns divided by attempts. If the season ended today, that'd be the second highest rate all time among quarterbacks with 200 or more attempts in a season. Peyton Manning's 2004 is the top rated one. And I've done research on touchdown rates in the past. They regress. They don't necessarily regress to league average because good quarterbacks will generally have higher touchdown rates, but a 9.5% rate is most definitely going to regress. That means Mahomes is unlikely to be this elite of a fantasy quarterback next year. And considering that we know that top running backs will give you a significant edge each year, Johnson and Connor are both more than likely going to be better options as keepers next season. That's going to do it for today's show, though. Thanks to everyone for listening. If you've yet to subscribe to the Late Round Podcast, make sure you are by searching for it on iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Spotify. And as always, if you're on iTunes, please leave me a rating and review. And you can follow me on Twitter, @LateRoundQB. Thanks, everyone. Good luck in Week 13, and enjoy your weekend.